All right, this is part two of Kidnapped from the previous episode. If you haven't listened to that, if you want some more context on how all this comes together, go back, listen to that. But I normally wouldn't do an episode like this. But I think all the events surrounding what happened, the intersection in my life at the time, and what ended up happening afterwards just I completely blew my mind. And so I wanted to share this and share the story and highlight the heroism of Troy Duncan. Now, to give you a little bit of background, Troy Duncan was a Highway State Patrol officer based in Alaska. And he was the responding officer to my attempted kidnap when I was 9 years old, back in 1984. So I told that story in episode 53. Interested in that, go listen to it. But the events after that, what happened to Troy, had to be told, because I looked it up. I dove into it, and I called up my dad, and he kind of pieced some of it together. And I had no idea all these years later that this happened. This was a killing spree that happened in a small town outside of Fairbanks, Alaska, where I grew up, in Manly Hot Springs. If you don't know the geography of Alaska, Fairbanks pretty much sits in the middle of the state, and there's different hot springs that you can go to. One, if you travel, I think, northeast, and then one west, about 150 miles outside of the town of Fairbanks. And in 1984, Manly Hot Springs only had about 80 people there. And so Michael Silva, who was a former military vet, he was in the Army. He was had gotten out of the Army and was kind of a troubled young man. I think he was only 24 at the time, and he had bounced around in, I forget which state it was, but he had bounced around down there, gotten a little bit of trouble with the law. And as the state, as Alaska is coined the last frontier, well, he escaped to Alaska. And he, and as many people do, frontiersmen or drifters or whatever, people wanted to get off the radar, they land in Alaska, and especially back in 1984. And earlier than that, as my dad was telling me, some of these people just fall off the map and they don't want to be messed with, and they can disappear in, you know, the thousands and thousands of miles of open land out there, right? So anyway, Michael Silva finds himself in Alaska and drives out to Manly Hot Springs. Like I said, 150 miles east, or excuse me, west of Fairbanks, and kind of end of the road. There's nowhere else to go. That's it. There's a population of 80, and the people in the town, with only 80 people, though, they know when somebody comes into the town. And it's not unusual for these type of people, the kind of drifters, people wanting to be frontiersmen. And apparently Michael Silva, he had talked a lot about that. Hey, I'm going to go live out on the land. I'm going to do my own thing and be able to make it. Well, if any of you listen to this, knows what it takes to live and sustain yourself without without the basics, and knowing how to do that, you know, not only get food, but shelter and the day-to-day, especially in Alaska with the extreme temperatures, extreme wildlife, is very, very difficult to do. But he had been telling people that he'd met there in this small town that that's what his plan was, that he wanted to kind of get out of society and just go make it on his own. And so he, at the end of the road, there's a boat ramp up to the Tanana River. Now, this river is massive. I think that at stretches of the river, it's almost a half mile across. I mean, it's huge. It runs through almost the entire state, I believe. And it's, it can be very deep at certain sections, but it feeds so many of these little towns along the way. The river's very, very, silty, very, very cold. It can be pretty much iced over most of the winter. And he, at this time, the river is flowing. It's not iced over, and he's there at a makeshift boat ramp. It's not the typical boat ramp you might be thinking of. It's basically a dirt patch area where you can get a boat into the river. And that's what the locals used to travel up and down the river, whether they're going fishing or hunting or going to other parts of the state. You could do that from this spot. Well, Michael Silva found himself there, and he camped out, and what he had in his vehicle, he had a canoe strapped on the top of his car, and that's where he was. Well, not too long after he arrives, two gentlemen go down to launch their boat, and their family back home realize they've been gone for a long time. And they end up going down to the boat ramp, and they go missing. Not just two people, but the wife, their two-year-old son, another gentleman. So five individuals go missing. And in a small town of 80 people, that doesn't go unnoticed for very long. Now think about 1984, it's not call 911, it's you have to actually call to Fairbanks and get in touch with the police. And it's typically by kind of like radio, like a ham radio. It's, I don't even know if they had the telephone lines all the way out there back then. But so they had to communicate with Fairbanks, like, hey, we got some missing people here. We don't know what's going on. There's a strange guy in our town, and, you know, it's got to come check this out. Now, Fairbanks being a long ways away, 150 miles away, they get the reports of everything going on, and so they kind of mobilize. They figure out that this Michael Silva character has quite a background, quite a past, and is dangerous. And they had pieced some things together from some other reports. Apparently, Michael Silva had stayed for some length of time in a small village outside of Fairbanks and had a confrontation with one of the neighbors, and one of those neighbors went missing. And the police that had responded to that had found blood outside of his cabin. Michael Silva said it was from a moose hide that from a recent hunt. They tested the blood. It was human. They came back to question him some more, and he had disappeared. And this person who went missing, Michael Silva had killed him and dumped his body in the river. And from there, he made his way to Manly Hot Springs. And now we have five more missing people right where he's at. So the Fairbanks State, Alaska State Trooper, excuse me, they needed to mobilize and get things together and prepare to go and get this guy. The town knew where he was. Nobody wanted to go down there. And their families were missing. We had a two-year-old young boy, a husband, wife, and two friends all missing. And so the town's freaking out. So Troy Duncan, remember the officer who responded to my attempted kidnapping? He was there in Fairbanks along with Jeff Hall, a pilot, and I believe two others. And they were part of this fast reaction team. And they most all of them had Vietnam experience and were sharpshooters and knew what to pack up, knew what to do. And how do you get to any place fast in Alaska? Well, it's either by plane or helicopter. They had access to helicopters. And so they figured they needed to search for this, for Michael Silva. And they got everything together. They started to get the helicopters together. Troy Duncan and Jeff Hall jumped in one with a pilot who was also a Vietnam vet. and they flew up to Manly, well, over, remember, it's kind of west of Fairbanks, the 150 miles, to where the town was saying that this drifter was. And so they're looking for Michael Silva. They're looking for his car and the canoe that he had on the top of his car. And so they flew out there. I think it was like 2 in the morning. Now you got to remember that 2 in the morning isn't like, well, why? How are they flying helicopters at 2 a.m. back in 1984? Well, in Alaska, the sun's just coming up at that time, right? In the summertime, the sun basically circles the sky. In the wintertime, it almost never comes up. So they had daylight was approaching when they landed at the boat ramp. And Michael Silva wasn't there. They found his car. They found where he was sleeping, all of his stuff. They also found the vehicle and the boat of the missing people that was still there. It was just sitting there. So they started doing an investigation. They found drag marks that were apparently something or somebody was dragged, looked like towards the river. They found blood and all the indication of, man, something really bad happened here. There was no eyewitnesses other than Michael Silva. And so they're kind of piecing all this together. And they noticed that the canoe off the top of his boat, or excuse me, his car was gone. And they said, well, let's get back in the helicopter. We can find this guy in the helicopter. And so they started traveling up and down the Tanana River looking for Michael Silva and his boat. And that's when Michael Silva killed again. Unfortunate gentleman coming back from hunting, coming down the river, ran into Michael Silva as they tried to piece it together. And Michael Silva shot him, killed him, took his boat, which was motorized, kind of a flat bottom boat, tied his canoe up to the back and kept traveling up the river. He got almost 25 miles up the river before the helicopters and Troy Duncan, Jeff Hall, and the pilot spotted him. Well, they didn't. Yeah, so they spotted him, the canoe, the flat bottom boat. And they put it all together like, wow, this is him. He's by himself and it appears to have guns in his boat. And as they flew over, you know, they're talking to him on the loudspeaker. Hey, pull your boat off to the side. Put your hands in the air. Give him a bunch of chances to kind of surrender. Michael Silva wasn't having any of it. He pulled off to the side of the river, tied his boat up, and grabbed his weapon. It was a single shot rifle and jumped out of the boat into the woods. And that's when they had talked amongst themselves in the helicopter, like, okay, what do we do? There's nowhere other than right where he pulled off to put the helicopter down to get out and go after this guy. Do we circle around? Do we keep stay in the air? And they chose to stay in the air because they did it. They had one of them had an M4, one had an M16. I think the other helicopter they had a sniper rifle as well. So they brought the helicopter down closer to kind of the tree level, and that's when Michael Silva stepped out from behind a tree, fired at the helicopter. Jeff Hall and Troy Duncan both returned fire at the same time. Miraculously, everybody missed that first volley of fire. The other people in the other helicopter, they describe it as Vietnam War era. Troops shooting at each other on the ground to the helicopter. Michael Silva reloads another round, takes one single shot, shoots through the canopy of the helicopter and strikes Troy Duncan into the neck, killing him instantly. Bullet fragments spray into the pilot's face, injuring him. You'd imagine blood's everywhere. Jeff Hall is on the side of the helicopter. And as Troy Duncan, or just after he gets hit, he sends another volley of fire at Michael Silva, striking him 8 times, 4 or 5 times through the legs, through the torso, and I believe once through the head. Michael Silva falls back into the river. And that helicopter pulls back. They didn't know he was dead at the time, but they have an injured Troy Duncan, an injured pilot. And so they have to go back and not only assess the damage, but try to take care of Troy and kind of reassess before they can come back and recover Michael Silva's body. I mean, this, when I heard this story, it just completely blew me away that somebody who I had met who had responded to our 911 call back in Fairbanks when I had that attempted kidnapping at the young age of 9, this hero, Troy Duncan, went after pretty much almost a mass murderer. They call it spree killings because they couldn't piece it together. Like, why would this guy just continually kill somebody? And that's what they did afterwards. Troy Duncan has passed away. He was killed. They took care of his body. They take care of the pilot. And that's when the detectives come in. They go back out. They recover Michael Silva's body. But they're trying to piece together, where are all these missing people? Did he put them in the woods? It's pretty apparent that what happened, because there's no eyewitnesses. Everybody that Michael Silva killed, he put in the river. The three gentlemen that were on the boat ramp, the one guy he met on the river, and the wife of one of the gentlemen, her unborn son, and the two-year-old that was with him, killed them all, dragged them, and threw them into the river. And Tanaw River is, like I said, super silty. It doesn't give up bodies, right? It's going to drag them down with the silt, and that's what happened to almost all of them. They did recover 3 of the bodies a couple days later, and then 1 a couple months later. But the young boy was never found, his mom either. And these spree killings, as they're saying, why? I think we'll never know why, but it was just unfortunate. I guess the cool part of the whole thing was to be able to honor a hero of Troy Duncan and what he did for me, a small act of responding to my incident when I was 9 years old, and to know who he was, and he responded. When the call came in, he got together with that team and went out there, and they took care of a threat. I think it's an honor to be able to talk about him. So that is the continuation and the finale of the kidnap story in the previous episode. If you want to know more, you can look this up, Michael Silva. Man, I got all the details right, but I wanted to get this out to everybody quickly, because you start to look up Alaskan murders, oh my gosh, there's some crazy ones. I don't think I'll cover any of those, because without something, you know, like a hero like Troy Duncan attached to it, or how it was loosely kind of connected with my life and being able to meet Troy back when I was a young kid, that was pretty cool. That's kind of the reason that I put this story on here. And anyway, hope you enjoyed it. If you do get a chance, make sure either on Apple or Spotify, you hit auto download for the next episodes coming up. It'll automatically download. And we'll see you on the next episode. See you.